All right, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson, and I'm here flying solo at the fabulous studio Fist in Your Face in wonderful Salt Lake City. Welcome to my beautiful studio audience. I can't remember what was supposed to be on the schedule, but I called an audible, as I sometimes do. I guess we start out with the news for the week. It was a short news week, in Mormonism. I don't think there's much of anything worth mentioning. So we're just going to move on to the podcast topic tonight. There's something I like to, this podcast I've titled John's Dilemma. And, you know, through the years as we've done the podcast, I've always kind of, kept the narrative of what's going on with the podcast and tried not to separate the commentators from the podcast. Cause I think in journalism, there's a school of thought where there's actual terms for this. But, you know, for a long time in American journalism, the idea was to have this dispassionate voice of authority and separate the narrator from the narration. You know, and you see this in textbooks with use of passive voice and all that sort of stuff. And we started down that path in Mormon Expression in the first 10 or 20 episodes, and then quickly that fell apart. And I think the podcast became more interesting as the personalities of the individuals kind of came through. And we've always from the beginning had, about two or three or four times a year, we come in and talk about the podcast and what we're thinking and why we're doing this, that, or the other. And, that's the topic I want to address tonight. And I want to talk about, my dilemma when it comes to a Mormon Expression and Whitefields. I want to start with what I call the coffee paradox in Mormonism, which is that to Orthodox Mormons, coffee is sinful. It's halal. It's evil. And they have constructed a paradigm around that, especially Mormons who've grown up very insular inside a Mormon bubble. And coffee is an other for them. It's something that's disgusting. It's something that is a visible sign of sinful behavior, and it's otherly. It separates you from the group. Now, a lot of Mormons grow up around non-Mormons, and they don't necessarily fall into this construction. So I'm not trying to paint with too broad a brush. But to an ex-Mormon or a non-Mormon, coffee is just a beverage, and as a matter of fact, it's not even that bad of a beverage. You know, there's other things that say Mormons drink a lot, like Monster or Diet Coke, or, you know, things that have chemicals in them, things that have shown to have negative health consequences. And I think from an outside dispassionate observer, they'd say, okay, somebody's drinking coffee over here and this person's drinking Red Bull. Like, one is not a morally superior position, but a Mormon would construct not drinking coffee as a morally superior position. They would construct as a moral issue. The coffee paradox is that once one discards or moves beyond or has never adopted the Mormon paradigm, coffee does not have that meaning. But in the Mormon's eyes, it has that meaning. So paradoxically, they can start drinking this thing because it's a tasty beverage that can get you going in the morning, and fall into this being seen as a particular thing. We run into this all the time with how we dress, right? There's no way to escape the fact, in America or wherever you go, that everybody's wearing a uniform. And it is extremely hard to break that paradigm, to be completely unique on your dress, right? This is almost impossible to do. You'd have to like wear one boot and a sneaker and like half pants and half skirt. You'd have to just like go crazy, because otherwise you're trading one uniform of one particular group and another uniform of another particular group. And a lot of people, especially younger human beings, fall into a paradigm of saying, I'm rejecting the meaning behind whatever it is I'm wearing, and I'm going to do my own thing. But usually as they get older, they realize that they can't control the way other people think. So if you sort of say, hey, I'm going to reject the Utah paradigm because I'm going to wear a white shirt and tie, but I'm not going to be a Mormon. And in their face, they won't know because I'm not a Mormon, but I'm going to dress like a Mormon. Well, in their minds, they're just going to construct you as a Mormon. And this goes with all these different paradigms that you can fall into. Why do I bring this up now when I'm talking about John's dilemma? Well, Mormon expression started out as, for me, an interesting way to talk about Mormonism. I've mentioned on the podcast before, I lost my faith around about 2002, and I quit going to church in 2005. So I lost my faith about 12 years ago, when it really sort of all fell apart for me. So it's been a long time. The podcast started in 2009. So between 2005 and 2009, I actually participated in the local, post-Mormon communities in Utah. And I was involved in, you know, trying to help build community and build network and all that kind of stuff. I'd sort of processed my way through the anger phase. And I moved out to North Carolina. I took a job out there when I finished grad school. And I'd read tons and tons and tons about Mormonism. And I was very interested in Mormon history and in particular Mormon theology and how it had evolved and what Mormons actually believe and what they actually believed in the 19th century. And not just the way the church, you know, has whitewashed it or whatever, but what did people believe on the ground and how did they construct this? This was sort of a hobby for me. And starting the podcast was a way for me to get my fix on the hobby because I was no longer around people. Like I'm looking at Nathan, who is a friend of mine from way back before I moved to North Carolina. And when I lived here in Utah, we could go and sit in the park and have a beer and talk about these things. And then I was suddenly out in North Carolina. I didn't have anybody around me who was LDS. So starting the podcast was really an outlet for me to talk about these issues. And if you're around me, I'm sort of an animated talker. And I can seem a lot more angry about topics than I really am. And that plays out in the persona, the person I play on this podcast. Because it's not exactly, the person on the podcast is not exactly the person I am at home. We're related, but we're not exactly the same guy. And that's become more so as time has gone by. So the podcast started for me as this hobby to really be involved in Mormon studies from a critical approach. Because a lot of the people involved in Mormon studies, say in Sunstone or Dialogue Magazine or the Sunstone conferences, there used to be it was middle territory where outright criticism of the church was not tolerated. So people who were outright critics tended to avoid these forums, at least as a form of criticism. There were plenty of critics who'd go to Sunstone and then sort of be on middle territory, but it wasn't an outlet for criticism. So for me, I wasn't interested in the pretense. Like, and when we started the podcast, we had, people from different walks of faith, as it were. But I never wanted it to be, say, a critical voice as dominant. I just became the dominant voice, and I happened to be critical. But that never really was the intent. I just wanted it to be honest. If I didn't want to pretend to give Mormonism some sort of pass where I didn't see any need to give it a pass. And I thought it's a religion with billions of dollars and millions of adherents that they can stomach one asshole critic on with a microphone, and I didn't have to temper my voice. And I've received a lot of criticism over the time for that, telling me I'm being unfair and beating up on the church. I mean, honestly, people say that to me, the church that controls this state, you know, and has so much money, they don't even know what to do with it. And a big PR departments and buildings and all this kind of stuff, that I'm being mean to them. Well, be it as it is. So that was the start of the podcast. Because Mormons and most fundamentalists have a way of seeing the world in black and white and painting things as being us versus them, I quickly got a reputation of being an anti-Mormon. And I will fully own the fact that I'm anti the church. And I'm pretty anti-religion in general. I don't like religion. I don't like the church. And I've never made any pretense about that level of criticism. I'm, it's very rare though that I attack a person, and it's very rare that I attack a person's individual beliefs. I believe personally that anybody can believe whatever they want. I don't care. And I have friends and people who are close to me who believe all sorts of things about spirituality or whatever that I don't particularly believe. It doesn't bother me one bit, my personal relationships. It's when you start using those beliefs to control other people, to control the law, to shut down pools on Sundays, to determine what people can wear, to extract money from people who are weak-minded or whatever. That's where I get out of line. But where I'm getting is with this podcast over the years, I have been labeled as an anti-Mormon. And the problem with the term anti-Mormon is it rhymes with the term anti-Semite. And an anti-Semite is a bigot, is somebody who hates people. And so I have tens of thousands of listeners who, if they listen to the podcast, can understand the nuanced position we have on the podcast. But for those 10,000 listeners, I probably have another 200,000 or 300,000 people, without exaggeration, who know me as a bigot. And it's something that I deal with in my natural life. And this will become more apparent as we go on in the podcast. But so when I mentioned the paradox of coffee. So as a non-believer, to talk about religion without giving religion deference, without assuming religion has this special, disposition, this special place in our dialogue, we have to give it space to be wherever it wants to be. I fall into the coffee paradox, which is because people assume a certain view about me and the podcast and a lot of you listening, we just get naturally assumed that we're evil. You drink coffee, i.e. you're evil, without the person saying, well, John left the church, so to him, coffee is not evil. Therefore, I can't use the coffee construction of the church. That sort of nuanced thinking is lost on many members of the church. They say, John left the church, he drinks coffee, therefore he's evil. And it's something we all deal with. Now, when I was talking to my good friend, Lindsay, about the topic for tonight, John's dilemma, she said, be careful what you say. She gave me the Cobra Kai speech. She said, your enemies, of which I have some, we'll use whatever weakness you display in tonight in the podcast against you. And I told Lindsay I don't care anymore. My problem is as time has gone by, it's now 2014. It's been 12 years for me. I increasingly don't give a fuck about Mormonism. And it becomes harder and harder for me sometimes to find the motivation to care. Now, I still care a lot about individuals, about the pain that's being caused, about this creating a world beyond these constructions of fundamentalism. These things motivate me quite a bit. But poking holes in the church doesn't interest me. I think last week there was one of the general authorities gave a commencement speech at Brigham Young University or something. And a lot of ex-Mormons got their panties in a bunch about it. And to me, it's like, okay, so here's an authority in the church speaking to the insiders of the church about something the church believes. You know, to me, it's the same as if you told me some evangelical is at Bob Jones University preaching evangelicalism. It's not news to me. And it's harder for me to sort of wrap myself emotionally around those things. To engage, and it takes more energy for me to do it. In a way, it's harder and harder spiritually for me to engage in a Mormonism, because it doesn't speak to me. The broader questions do speak to me still. Now, I have had, John's dilemma, which probably is about time for me to define. John's dilemma is, what do I do about my relationship to Mormonism? Or when do I walk away from Mormonism? When do I let it all go? This has come up, two or three times. It basically comes up every summer. And I think that's because, the summers are when the energy of the volunteers who help in the podcast flags the most. Downloads will go down. People wanting to help with the podcast. It's just harder to keep the energy for the podcast going through the summer. And I, of course, feel that myself. So this is sort of the third, stage of dilemma for me. The third time I've been through this. The first time, as loyal listeners will know, came about, right before the divorce. And of course, anybody who's been through a divorce knows that like a thunderstorm, whatever, the clouds don't just suddenly appear in the sky and it starts raining, that things will be developing over time, you know. And so there was the general issues I was dealing with in my personal life and the podcast I'd been doing for a couple years. And, you know, you start to say, is this worth my time? And so we step back a little bit. And I kind of worked my way through the divorce. And I came back in, and it was an important growth for me to come back and reengage the podcast, personally. Although, you know, once again, Mormonism, or the anger behind Mormonism, the outrage of the Mormonism out there at this time didn't speak to me. When I came back in, it was sort of reclaiming my identity, getting back to the things I was doing before, after the divorce. And then I came to the, I asked myself why I want to keep doing this, because I don't derive pleasure anymore from attacking Mormonism. And in fact, those things, those elements of Mormon studies that used to intrigue me don't anymore. I'm just, and part of it is because I know a lot of Mormon history, and it's just not as interesting to me. But I realized that my paradigm had shifted, that in doing this, I've had the great opportunity to meet with many, many, many people. And hear their stories. And many people reached out to me that the podcast has been very valuable to them. It's been helpful in them understanding that they're not crazy, that there's other people who are like them, and helping them deconstruct this religious, construction that they were given. And that's what the podcast was about for me. It wasn't about trying to, shepherd people out of the church. It wasn't about, I just noticed I'm referring to it in past tense. I'm still doing it. It isn't about, shepherding people out of the church. It isn't about any of that stuff. It's about helping people understand that you're not crazy. There's a system that we all got caught up in. And about once a podcast, I smile sitting up here because the thought comes back to me that I, at one time, believed all this stuff, that I bought it all. But I realized that there was something bigger to be done. Lindsay jokes with me that I started, the counseling portion of Whitefields because I got tired of talking to people, counseling them myself. And I guess there's some truth in that. I don't think it's necessarily that I got tired of it, as I knew I was in way over my head. And I would get phone calls or people stopping by or people staying after the podcast, and I still do, who are reaching out, who need somebody or something. And I'm not a counselor, and I don't have the answers. And I saw, as I've made the case many times, if you've been listening for the past 6 months, that it's all about this identity transformation. So when we rebooted when I decided to get the studio, I emotionally couldn't support doing the podcast in my own home anymore. I needed that personal separation from the podcast here. So the only answer then really was to get it out of my house. I mean, I had to get a studio. But I also knew there were a lot of people who would call me every week wanting to come see the podcast. And my little dingy basement, it was no longer sufficient for having it there. But I went through and came up with a plan saying, all right, I will keep doing this podcast because it fuels this other passion that I have, which is helping people arrive at healthy identities outside of religion. And for the past year, that's the motivation that has kept me doing Mormon Expression. And Mormon Expression is the engine that keeps Whitefields running. And although Mormon Expression is fun, and I enjoy engaging these discussions, I enjoy interacting with the audience here, it's not my passion. And the only reason I do Mormon Expression is to keep Whitefields running. Let's talk a little bit about money, and let's talk a little bit about me. I haven't really talked about myself personally a lot in the podcast. I have a regular full-time job. As a matter of fact, today I started work at 5:30 this morning, and I have a professional job. I'm a project manager for a major company. And I got off work at 4:15 this afternoon, and I didn't have time to take a lunch. And then I rushed down to the studio, and I met with I had a marketing meeting for Whitefields, and then we started the podcast. This will be by the time I'm done, this will be a 19-20 hour day for me. I have received criticism, quite a bit of criticism among the ex-Mormons, because we advertise to give donations to the podcast. We never charge for the podcast ever, but we get a great deal of criticism. One of the requests that people have is that we be quote unquote transparent on our finances. I haven't really ever published the finances, in part because, well, the only way to be transparent is to have an outside auditing firm come in. Because if you don't trust me, why would you trust whatever I put into a spreadsheet? Why would that somehow be more honest than not doing it? But it takes a lot of time. So in the interest of transparency, I'll tell you what the finances are. Whitefields runs under an operational budget of under $20,000 a year, for 2014. Myself, I take a wage of $500 a month. I work approximately 20 hours a week on Whitefields / Mormon Expression, which means I make $2 an hour, doing this. And there have been months when I didn't start taking a salary on that front till about 2 years ago. So the first few years, I did it pro bono. The majority of the money that comes in for Mormon Expression goes to fund other things like counseling. So the majority, as a matter of fact, because the money gets complicated at this point, but about 60% or whatever of what comes in of people who subscribe to Mormon Expression goes to funding other Whitefields projects, namely counseling. And that's why I keep doing Mormon Expression, is because I use the money that we raise with Mormon Expression to do these other identity-based things. For me, that there's a personal toll because there's a 20-hour, I told you I work 20 hours a week or so on this project. There's a 20-hour a week opportunity cost. And I'm at a stage in my career where if I move to the next level, I won't be able to do Mormon Expression anymore. I simply won't have the time to do it. You know, so if I advance my career, and I'm to that point where I should be moving to the next step in my career, but it's difficult to maintain my own personal life, including the fact that I'm a single father and I have 50% custody of my children, and do Mormon Expression and do Whitefield. I mean, do my regular full-time job. And so that's always been a dilemma, something that I'm measuring, especially the last couple of years, of is this particular endeavor that I have worth pursuing? Is that $20,000 a year that we can contribute to this identity transformation thing, is that worth the cost that I take out of my own personal life? Especially when I go back to where I started. A lot of people, this has been said, I've researched it out all over the internet. There's a lot of people who say basically that John Larson or whoever else runs a podcast like this shouldn't be paid because we have the benefit of being famous. But I would say that I have a downside of being infamous in that it might actually be impossible for me to get a new job in Salt Lake City. Because my name is tainted by being a critic of the church, on both fronts. A taint, by the way, which gets me $500 a month. Now, in the studio right now, I'm looking at the equipment. The setup in here, this equipment setup costs us about $10,000. Some of that, not all of it, was funded by me. I haven't kept a close accounting, but I would guess that over the years, if you cost average it, I've spent more money on Mormon Express than I've taken out. And I mean, I don't say this to, you know, make anybody feel sorry for me, but I do say in response to some of the critics who have criticized us for trying to pay the bills, basically, which is something I don't understand. And I've seen people especially go after John DeLynn for this. People who will take something that they see as a service to people, they see as something that's valuable. John DeLynn and his Mormon Stories community provides a lot of value to a lot of people. And they will criticize John for trying to turn that into his career. And yet they'll go to McDonald's afterwards and fund these enormous corporations, that with basically blood money. What I don't understand, and this criticism I've seen not just in this Mormon, ex-Mormon world, where people believe that this stuff should be all free, and that anybody trying to make a living off of providing services that other people are happy to consume are somehow evil, yet they'll go to the department store and buy all sorts of shit and expect people get paid off of that. I do not understand this dilemma. And frankly, it's one of the top 10 things that really bug me about like this community that I'm in. And it's not about me personally, because every hour I've spent by choice, but it just bleeds out all over. And it's gone so... Well, I won't say that. so that's our transparency. But there's a lot of people out there who want to ensure that I don't make money off of the podcast. Some of these people want the podcast to fold. They just want us to go away. That's okay. So some of the things that I ask myself every day is, are we really doing any good? Does it really matter that much? Is it worth the personal sacrifice I make to my own reputation of the energy it takes to devote to something that I think is a net negative? I think that leaving the church is very difficult, and it's important to find community. It's important to find others. It's important to process through this stuff, but only for a while. There's a lot of research now among psychologists suggesting that the idea of catharsis is wrong, that doing things like, there used to be counseling, the marriage counseling, they'd have people like punch pillows and stuff like this. But what the research shows is this sort of venting doesn't actually make you feel better. It raises your anger. So when one leaves the church, there's a period of time, and it's defined individually, where connecting with other people and processing through your faith gives value. Then it starts having a point of diminished returns. And it starts becoming a negative drain, a boat anchor around people's necks. And in the years I've been doing this, unfortunately, I've seen a lot of people who just stay wallowing in it. And I see friends who 10, 15 years later are still posting like shit on their Facebook feeds. And it's just like, move on already. I mean, I know I'm sounding like people in the church, and it's ironic coming from me. But that's where I get to the point where it's harder and harder for me to record the podcast and for me to find the interest, because in a lot of ways I've moved on. And those people who know me in my private life will know that we don't talk about the church very much. And if you come up to me at a party and start talking about the church, I will exit stage right as quickly as I can. Because I just don't, it doesn't do anything for me, and it can be a negative. So John's dilemma again is, I have built this thing that I believe in. Whitefields. And I believe in helping people through this identity crisis, in building communities, in providing outlet, in helping people deconstruct their faith to move on to something healthy. The church in all this, to me, I don't care about it. It's just something that's in the background. It's about people and people reclaiming their own identity. And I really want to push people to gain their potential. People are so, religion locks people into these petty lives and has them do bogus shit all the time, doing genealogy and temple work and stuff that just is going to eat up their time. But people are so full of potential, and, just one or two determined people can do so many amazing things. And the thing that's most impressive about the ex-Mormons, the people I've associated with, is how brilliant they are. The ability to deconstruct one's own faith and admit to themselves that they were wrong is something that 95% of the world population cannot do. They cannot admit they were wrong on that wide a scale. And these people that I get to interact with, even though they drive me nuts sometimes, the fact that they are able to do that makes them exceptional. And I so much, in a paternalistic sort of negative way, want to push people on and say, you're so much more. You can do so many things. This world is such a huge place and what we can do. So my dilemma is, as it gets harder and harder for me, and I have to take an emotional chunk out of my soul to come in and do this. And what's ironic, if you listen to the podcast last 6 months, I don't even like talking about Mormonism very much. I'm always talking about identity and other bullshit like that. But in that period, we've doubled our listenership. I don't understand this. I figured as I got more preachy, I would drive people away. But the other thing that I can't puzzle my head around is we've dropped our conversion rate of subscriptions. So we're getting more and more listeners, but a smaller percentage of them are actually subscribing to the podcast. So, although I ask for money more now, maybe there's this effect that people just don't like to be asked for money. I don't know. So yeah, I don't know exactly what to do. And where I'm at right now with the podcast is that, I signed the lease, for the studio out till January. And when I decided to do that back in December of 2013, I said, well, I'm going to do the podcast until then. And that's how I've been doing the podcast for the last 3 years. I just set kind of like how I run. I'm going to make it to that fire hydrant. And then when I make it to that fire hydrant, I'm going to make it to the next phone pole or whatever. And that's how I've been doing the podcast. And, don't get me wrong. I mean, I love the sound of my own voice. But the it's harder and harder for me to do. And it really is tempered by the question of, are we really building a better place in this world? Whitefields is very important to me. I believe in the mission of Whitefields. I believe that it's helpful. I believe that these services are needed. But I get frustrated by, that I feel like sometimes I'm pulling teeth. And I had a situation just recently where I was dealing with I'll lay it flat out, dealing with a therapist who's trying to gouge us. And it's just like, there's so many people doing all this stuff for free or for just pennies. And sometimes I just get a little discouraged, you know, that I can't force people to do what's good for them, you know? So the reason I'm recording this podcast is I want to put it out there. I want to crowdsource it. I don't know how much longer I can keep doing this. I've got other interests in my life, and a lot of my interests cost money. so doing, you know, doing a part-time job, where I make $2 an hour, is not something that a lot of you would be interested in doing. There's opportunity cost for me. You know, I'm at a position in my career where I can make pretty good money. And if I move up to another position and work extra hours, I can make a lot more than the $2 an hour. And that buys me a lot of cheese and a lot of tasty whiskey and vacations to Disneyland. you know, that's nice. So, I hate asking everybody for money, and I'm not asking people for money right now, but I am putting the question out there because I feel like we all collectively, all 108,000 of you or 20,000 people who downloaded in July, we're all a big team right now. What do we want to do with Mormon Expression? And what do we want to do with Whitefields? One of the challenges, since I've been running the nonprofit, it's been really fun to engage in and talk to other people who run nonprofits and to pay attention to that. All nonprofits, not just Whitefields, has a problem. They have a big problem, and that's volunteers. The problem with volunteers in a capitalistic society is volunteers do not feel committed to do whatever they volunteered to do. So the constant dilemma you have is you get a lot of people volunteering, but you get very little follow through. And one of the, as I look back over my years of Mormon Expression, one of the biggest heartbreaks for me has been the hours and hours and hours I've spent training people and bringing them in and getting them up to speed and sometimes buying them analytical software or whatever and then having them do nothing or get what they wanted from me, learn what they wanted to learn, and then they exit stage left. And it's left me, unfortunately, very cynical about working with volunteers. And everybody, or not everybody, but most people who work for Whitefields get paid. They don't get paid very much, and they oftentimes get paid on commission, but that's where the money goes, because I found that people work for money and they don't really work for anything else, in my experience. So that's where we're at. So when I say crowdsourcing, what Whitefields needs is two things. It needs money, because money pays for the therapists and money keeps the lights on. And it needs people who will do things. So I was talking to my marketing folks, and what we decided is every other week here at the Whitefields Community Center, at 5 o'clock, we are going to have our volunteer coordination meeting. And what we're going to do is whoever wants to work with Whitefields or believes in the mission should come here at 5 o'clock, and then we will talk about what needs to be done and people can do it or not do it. Our first one will be on September 9th, Tuesday, September 9th, which will be right before the podcast, an hour and a half before the podcast records. So people who are interested in helping out with Whitefields, can come out. I get a lot of people who volunteer stuff on their own terms every week. And what I would like everybody to understand is that if you want to volunteer something that has cost for me, especially in terms of time, I have very little time. So this happens quite a bit. For example, you might say, I have a wonderful Picasso at home. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to donate that Picasso to you. Well, if they donate the Picasso to me, I have to then store it and insure it and then find an art agent to auction it off. And then I have to, report that to the IRS. And if you have a Picasso, I'm happy to take it, by the way. Just for the record. But you get my drift, that a lot of people want to volunteer on their own terms. And I'm very appreciative of that. But sometimes I don't have the time to interact with volunteering on people's own terms. So I'm putting this out there to the world, and we can start talking about this on Facebook or on wherever forum we have of, can Mormon Expression survive John's lack of interest in Mormonism? Is Whitefield something that's necessary and needed out there enough that people can support it? And where do we collectively, as this group of misfit, of lost children from the church, where do we put our energy? What do we do? Because when the church says, ex-Mormons, leave the church, can't leave it alone, what they're saying is go away. The church wants you to just walk away and ignore it. Just like, somebody like raping somebody in an alley. They want you just to keep walking. Don't get involved. Just keep going away. And you will be tainted if you take on the church. You will be hated. You'll be reviled because no one likes a turncoat. I've said before that I get contacted by the press fairly frequently, but they never quote me. They'll find, because I'm a turncoat, no one believes me. I'm an ex-Mormon. And I've had them tell me this. I had a reporter from Reuters explain this to me. That's how it dawned on me. It didn't dawn on me. She explained it to me. That they'll oftentimes talk to all the ex-Mormons, and then they'll go find liberal Mormons to quote. And you can probably think of a bunch of people who identify themselves as Mormons just saying, what does this person have to do with Mormonism? Well, they get a lot of press that way, right? So it helps their books and whatever else, because they're Mormon. And so there's this cost that we all have to incur, this social cost, if we do anything versus if we walk away. And that's John's dilemma. So I don't have any answers. I'm not leading you down the primrose path to where I wanted you for the big reveal. When it comes to money, we need a lot of it. What I need is enough money that I can hire people to work full time. That's the only thing that's going to keep a Whitefield sustainable in the long run. And I don't dare ask anybody for that kind of money. And I don't have the time to ask people for that kind of money. I make decent money. I'm not rich. I'm not poor. And I'm frankly outside the bounds of what I would make as a director of a nonprofit. So I'm not really ready to kind of come over to Mormon Expression and take a cut in pay. I have to pay child support and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know that I'm the right guy to keep running this organization. And I don't know exactly what to do with it. I want it to keep continuing. It's my baby. And I'd love to see it succeed. So yeah, it's time to crowdsource this motherfucker and figure out what we can do. This feels like a real downer. We need to end on a high note. We've got lots of things. There's so many projects. There's so many clever things that we could do. The fascinating people that I've met in the ex-Mormon world all around the world. You know, the people who've come out of the woodwork, who listen to this podcast, people who are fascinatingly connected to the world, who oftentimes won't reveal who they are. Famous Mormons who are secretly ex-Mormons, who you would never guess listen to this podcast. And it's been a wild ride. I couldn't ask for anything more. And I know I sound like I'm giving my departing speech, which I've done before. Like, this isn't the first time I've quit, right? I don't know. I don't know where it's going to take me. You can watch, but I appreciate and everything that's been given to me, which is so much. It's been worth it. It's been worth it. The sacrifice, the price I've had to pay, not in ways that some people think, but just the stories I've heard, the people I've been able to meet, the most incredible people. And I no longer regret my Mormonism. And, although I think Mormonism is so dopey, the Mormons are still my people, but not in a way like that I identify with them. I mean, I laugh at them at Disneyland, but they're still sort of my people and I love them. Not enough to go back to church though. Church sucks. All right. Well, I think that's all I have to say. And if you've made it this far, wow. Holy cow. You've got a problem. keep listening. We'll see where our journey takes us. So to my studio audience tonight, I'm going to buy them all a round of Bud Light and then we're going to go out in the patio and drink. Thanks, everybody.
The Mormon Expression podcast is recorded live before a studio audience in Salt Lake City on Tuesday nights at 6:30. Come down and join the audience, take part in the podcast, and meet John and the panelists. The Mormon Expression podcast is produced by the Whitefield Educational Foundation. Visit us online at whitefieldseducational.org to find out about our counseling services and other special events.